views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Here we are. Thanksgiving tomorrow. We'll be on tomorrow night. I'm not sure who's going to show up, but we're always on Thanksgiving evening, thanks to Todd and his endless patience. But we like to stay in touch. Too much going on. And obviously, we, all of us who care, and that's everybody who cares, wish all of you who care a very kind, happy, warm, pleasant, and reflective day, at least part of a day. And that's not easy to achieve in this particular geopolitical configuration we find ourselves in, not to mention the economy. My God, you have 60% of Americans now using credit cards just to make it through the month. What happens when the cards are maxed out? Biden is now talking about another $60 billion to send to Ukraine. What a piece of dirt he is. Of course, he's not doing this. He's just a puppet. Nonetheless, I think it's $250 billion we've given to Ukraine. It's over $200 by my count. God knows how much we've given to the Zionist Israeli maniacs over there to slaughter other human beings. Slaughter them. Maybe 200,000 have been murdered in Gaza and the West Bank, to a lesser degree. And now in Lebanon, even though there is a ceasefire underway, or was, I assume it still is, we are really throwing, talk about good money after bad, we don't even have the money to throw. All this money is just being racked up in the national debt, which is, what is it, every 4 months now? It's another $1 trillion or damn, it's some huge science fiction amount. I'm not able to track it. Anyway, I hope you have a good day tomorrow. Now, first up tonight, it's a pleasure to welcome back a real researcher and scholar, Walter Wilkinson, who has done more, I think, given this program and his appearances here. This is his fifth time to bring light to the one of the most horrible things that this government has ever done to American people, and that's to actually ignite a nuclear weapon, killing hundreds of Americans, and then, of course, lying about it. They test anything they want on us. And they did it at Port Chicago. And you've heard the story from Walter. And he's back tonight because we have new developments. He's come up with some new things. And I'm really looking forward to this. So welcome back, Walter.
Well, thank you, Jeff. How do I sound tonight?
You sound great. Real okay. Good. We had some phone... kind of phone fuzziness before, but you were always understandable. But no, you sound fine. Very clear.
Okay, good. I sent some images along, which I'm not sure if you had time to get them up on the website.
They should be. I sent them over for posting over a half an hour ago. So let me find out. Let's see. Yeah, they appear to be there. Most important is the last wave from Port Chicago by Peter Vogel. You want to go ahead and tell us about that and how you came up with a copy? That is under Walter's name right now in Guests. And the formal title for the program is The Day the U.S. Government Nuked Americans in the Huge Port Chicago Blast. All right. Tell us about Peter Vogel. People don't remember, so let's reset that stage.
Okay, I'm trying to catch up with the images here. So I'm on the front page.
Yeah, if you look on the left, top left, guest tonight's guests, click on that. Yeah. And it'll open a page, and you'll see Wednesday, Walter Wilkinson, right? And then you'll see also, if you look, everyone, Jeff and Erica for hour two. She's back. She's back tonight, so we'll do that in an hour. So do you see yet? Right. Yet?
Tonight's guest, Miss Alive.
Yeah, just click on guests, the tonight's guests. Just click on that, and it'll open up tonight's guests. Click here.
Okay.
The, Peter Vogel. Now, what I'm concerned about is the other two aren't up yet, so I'll make sure they get up there. But we can start with the last wave from Port Chicago.
Yeah. Well, so the person who was the first and foremost in suggesting that the Port Chicago explosion, which caused 321 fatalities in 1944, was not an accident. So if you go to a website or any encyclopedic source like history.com, with that golden domain name, it's going to be at the top of your search engine results. And they will tell you that there was an accident where some poorly trained ammunition handler on July 17th, 1944 dropped some artillery shells or something and caused a chain reaction which caused the Port Chicago explosion. And then in 1981, Peter Vogel published an article in a scholarly journal called The Black Scholar. And the reason it went to that scholarly journal was that two-thirds of the fatalities were black men. They were African Americans. And that's a very long and important story, but it diverts attention from the explosion itself. Which was Peter Vogel's a focus and it's mine also because I'm basically trying to extend his work. So Peter Vogel, if he were alive today, would be 87 years old, and I suspect that he still is alive, but keeping a very low profile.
Oh, so, that's smart. But he's thanks to you. I don't want to be upfront about this. Presenting this tonight, his book, and making it available. That's a big contribution, and he does deserve a lot of credit. Go ahead.
Yes, he studied this for 35 years, and if we look at the second most important scholar of this kind during this period, there really wasn't any. He was all by himself. And I think at some point, maybe it was about 2009 or so, something happened, and the authorities probably told him to quit doing what he was doing.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did.
Triggered that.
Yeah.
Yes. He said that once that his house had been broken into twice, and he had a box of his most important Port Chicago documents which got stolen. And
oh, really? That did not make it into his book? They were pending or just auxiliary information?
No, if you listen to the two half-hour MP3 interviews with what's his first name, Joe Edmonds. It's the only place it's mentioned. But yeah, it's you're right. You're exactly right. You've got these details well in hand, Mr. Runtz. It's not mentioned in print anywhere.
Wow.
But as a thing you and I both take an interest in is that another of his accomplishments was that he unearthed a short film clip of the Port Chicago explosion actually happening on July 17th, 1944. And in the wake of that, it was judged to be the most powerful explosion in the history of North America. But it was
this, you say, Walter, pardon me, you said it was a phone clip. Was somebody recording a phone call who was near enough to? What do you mean?
Film clip.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well, okay. Now, I was going to ask about that a little later, but fine. It's here now. Where is this film clip somehow still around, or was it vacuumed away by the dark side?
That's a work in progress for me. The last I know of it was that there was a television station in San Francisco called KQED who built the reformatting of the ancient a nitrate movie footage onto a videotape. So that's
okay, now let's not, I don't want to spoil the soup here, so keep at it, and for goodness sakes, if you find that, that'll be the discovery of a lifetime.
Yes, yes. And occasionally I have to think, it's a hard time for whistleblowers, and what happens to me if I succeed the way I would like to succeed?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Walter, let me tell you straight. You have made an enormous contribution to one of the biggest secrets in American history. The U.S. government and military nuked Americans here in the United States. It happened. And I hope everyone out there should be at least marginally shocked if you didn't know about this. It's a fact. It's not fiction. Please continue.
Right. And everyone knows that last year the blockbuster movie was called Oppenheimer. Which was J. Robert Oppenheimer was the head of laboratory at Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico at the time the Manhattan Project was going on, and last year it won a record 13 Academy Award nominations. It won Best Picture and some others, and it broke some records for box office results in at least two categories, which really impressed me. One is that it was the best box office results in history for a movie which was a biography of someone, and another is that it moved into the number one position for movies about World War II. So if anyone wants to say this is ancient history and it doesn't matter anymore and people aren't interested, there's the counter-argument.
People
I don't think it was a very good movie.
Money. You don't think it was a very good movie? I was going to ask next question was going to be how would you have made the movie properly? Because Hollywood will do what Hollywood does, and I think what you're talking about, they rewrite things and they re-image them. Go ahead.
Well, you made a suggestion in one of our earlier shows that you could make a good movie of the chief engineer for the war effort in three different projects, William S. Parsons.
Yeah, that would be a worthy and magnificent movie. That guy was, he was arguably, right, our greatest genius. The guy was a man for all seasons and absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, the atom bomb was just one of the three projects he was chief engineer for. The other one of the others was radar, which was one of the technologies which allowed us to win the Pacific War with the Japanese. And it was also what were they called? The proximity fuse, which isn't well known. I just learned about this recently because of Captain Parsons, who was absolutely was critical. We had better proximity fuses than the Japanese or the Germans. And at one point, General William S. Patton, is that his name? George S. Patton.
George said, Patton. Yep.
I always think of George C. Scott, of course. But,
yeah, funny. Yeah, it's true.
What a great performance.
Yeah.
But also,
too bad they didn't follow it along and tell the whole story in the film, why he was killed, who did it, not necessarily by name, but the mechanics involved with what happened to George Patton. Patton, at the end of the war, made one of the most, I think, profound statements ever made by anyone in the U.S. military. He said, "We fought the wrong enemy." And that killed him. They took him out.
Yep. He was a great military genius, without a doubt. So, as Jeff knows, and some of in the audience may have heard already, if we look at Jeff was referring to a PDF document which is on his website now, which I've been working on. This is a preliminary version of a 2024 version of Peter Vogel's masterpiece, 320-page PDF document, The Last Wave from Port Chicago. And the almost hard-to-believe story, which I don't mind repeating because it's so bizarre, this story begins in Santa Fe, New Mexico in 1980 when Peter Vogel, who had a successful career as a member of scientific advisory boards in New Mexico, and the governor of Mexico, New Mexico, had appointed him to one of those positions. Though he's not a scientist, and he never worked for Los Alamos or the federal government, but he had a successful career working for the New Mexico government in energy projects. Well, anyway, he had some time to kill, so he stopped by the Christ Evangelical Lutheran Church in New Mexico, Santa Fe, when they were having their annual, Jeff, rummage sale.
And this is quite a story.
It's important to know that Peter Vogel had what the British call a unusual hobby. And I haven't heard that so much in American English, but British males can be very, very eccentric. And so that's more of an English sort of term, an unusual hobby. Well, his was that he collected antique expired photographic materials. And the reason he did that was that back in the pre-Photoshop days, he could get unusual results with some of those really old papers and supplies because they had superior characteristics. So he could get interesting artistic effects from these things. So that's why he did it, he says. So he goes to the rummage sale because he has some time to kill. He says, he doesn't say he was ever a member of his church, of that church, but his wife was. So he goes to the rummage sale, and there are, you know, used plumbing fixtures and assorted junk, and probably in 1980, there are those gaudy polyester shirts that people used to wear in the 1970s, which went out of style. So there are a lot of those. Yeah, I used to have some of those. He saw a cardboard box on the floor under the banquet table, and it had antique photographic supplies in it because it had been donated to the rummage sale by a man named Paul Masters, who used to be a photographic technician at Los Alamos during the Manhattan Project. And
now, who's for our listeners that tuned in late? Who's at the rummage sale? Let's tell them again.
Peter Vogel. Yep, Peter Vogel.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Okay. And the box of photographic papers was donated by Paul Masters, who worked at Los Alamos.
Mm-hmm.
And he made a bootleg, a completely unauthorized copy of a document, a one-page document, which went by him, which is entitled The History of the 10,000-ton Gadget. And if it's up on, let's see if a copy of that is, oh, yeah, it's up. Well, okay, now, a thing that has happened here. So if you look down from the cover, that first picture is the cover of the book which I'm working on, which is a 2024 edition. But what's happened here in this, there, you see a table with rows and columns, and somewhere along
scroll
the
down,
line.
Scroll down for the table. It's right below the cover of the book, tentative cover. Go ahead.
So what happened here is it's been corrupted because some software program has tried to do optical character recognition on it. So it's really it's just gibberish, unfortunately. Occasionally you see where it hasn't been corrupted, and there'll be numbers like 1500, and in the top header column, those are all scientific. It's relentlessly
terminology.
Scientific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's what it here. You if you get a magnifying glass, you can read these. Let's see if I can read number 10. In a test, blast wave would reach installation.
Oh,
yeah. And observers at 10,000 yards. 10,000 yards. It would reach installations and observers at 10,000 yards. Also, a ball of fire reached a height of 2,000 feet and is completely disintegrated, late, turbulent, something. Anyway, okay, so that's what's on there. You can find out, if you get a magnifying glass, what it says. Now, what I just read, go ahead.
Well, that's because somebody corrupted this, but in the copy of my book, I was kind of struggling with this today, but it's clearly legible. When it's presentable, and this gives you the wrong idea.
Good.
About how cryptic it is, unfortunately.
Yeah. But, okay. Now that just described the Port Chicago blast.
It mentions,
correct?
It mentions the word Port Chicago. So Peter Vogel saw this box of old photographic papers, and he got excited about it, and he paid the church 25 cents, and he got a written receipt for it, which was important because he then became the legal owner of it.
Legal owner,
and this will become a court. Yeah. So so he comes home, and he wonders what Port Chicago is because he had never heard of it before, and he looked it up and found that there had been an accident on San Francisco Bay, the eastern part of San Francisco Bay, in 1944 during the war, when some undertrained ammunition handler dropped something, and there was a chain reaction.
That's the official story. Now, that, by the way, that blast, that accident, happened almost one calendar year before the Trinity supposed first trial at Trinity.
Yes, and this is the deep riddle. How is it possible that an atom bomb went off a year before the first atom bomb test in New Mexico? So really what happened was there's been this awful cover-up, including that movie last year, where the lie is put forward that the White Sands, New Mexico, Trinity site, a test of a plutonium bomb was the first ever atom bomb going off, when actually it was the second. And the first was at Port Chicago, California. So
now, what is the projected title of your book?
It'll be Last Wave from Port Chicago by Peter Vogel, 2024 edition, compiled by Walter Wilkinson.
Okay, so you're going to actually give Peter Vogel credit in the title. Well, it's very kind of you.
Oh, absolutely.
I would, well, too, but I think you ought to, you might want to include that somewhere, that the American government actually nuked American citizens on American soil. I mean, somehow work that into the title, subtitle, whatever. That's important. This government, we haven't had a government to represent us since John Kennedy, and you saw how well that went. So we've been in trouble for a long time. The communists were surging everywhere in the 30s and 40s here. Joe McCarthy was right. Anyhow, very good.
And if you scroll down far enough, you'll see that the whole text of his original book is included unmodified in that same PDF, which is up there on your website. And I'm scrolling all the way to the end. I had something visually interesting. Well, maybe there's too much stuff up here. Yeah. Anyway.
Now, that's the first link under Walter's name. If you want to click on that, let it load. It's a PDF, and it'll take some time to load, but it's there. And this literally was lost to history for the most part until yes. You found it.
Yes. It was up on the one remaining copy was up on the Internet Archive, also called the Wayback Machine, but it was not indexed. So no one could find it. All those billions of books. So there was a roundabout way. I have skills as a web developer, so I was able to find a direct link to it. I think if I had not been bringing this to people's attentions, like on this program tonight, no one else would have, because you would have to have as strong as an interest I've had, and at the same time as skills as a web developer, and without those two things together, I don't think it would have happened. So I think this document was just hanging by a thread.
And I agree, and I hope Peter Vogel hears about your heroic work, and we'll make sure that this gets launched properly when it's ready, and I'll support you any way I can. This is an outrageous event that happened. Can you imagine if you told someone that America saw its own people nuked by its own government on some test? It's crazy. People wouldn't believe it. They'd just say, you're nuts. Wrong.
And that's not to mention the racial dimension. But
They blew up a lot of blacks, okay? I'm going to keep it really stupid simple. But people in the 40s, African-Americans hadn't reached the level that they were going to reach later on. They were still second-rate citizens, so losing 300 of those, should that have been discovered? It's like the syphilis experiments at Tuskegee on black aviators. Blacks were expendable. In fact, all American military are expendable, let's be honest. Go ahead.
Well, it's so interesting that you mention that, Jeff, because the person who has been so soundly criticized for the Tuskegee syphilis intentional use of black people was actually Vannevar Bush, a famous name. And if we look at one of the top people in the Manhattan Project, well, that was Vannevar Bush. So in both cases, there is this cold-hearted willingness to accept black people as having lives.
No, they used them like lab rats. Come on, let's be honest. Yep. That's what they did. They didn't care. Yep. They just killed them to see what would happen. Yep. This was a test of an atomic bomb a year before it was publicly admitted that we were going to test one, and they used it on blacks. This is sick. This is disgusting, the whole thing. What an outrage. Peter Vogel, 36 years researching this to put this together, and I want to thank you, Walter, internationally, globally, for your work. Otherwise, we wouldn't have this essential piece of history that Peter Vogel put together after over 35 years of work. This is an extraordinary achievement, my friend. You are to be commended most highly.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's that makes the hard work easier to take.
I know it's hard.
Yeah, if the next thing you'll see on that, let's see, what is under the columns and rows of the central jewel of this, which unfortunately the text has all been scrambled, but in the book it'll be correct. But under the, it looks a little like a spreadsheet file, but it isn't. So underneath the table with the history of the 10,000-ton gadget, this is a new feature I've added, which is a reader's guide to the 2024 edition. And a thing I mentioned to you, Jeff, the first time we communicated, Peter Vogel has this very high IQ. He has a higher IQ than me, and he's more driven. And there's some things in his writings which, are kind of unusual, but he has this way of going way overboard in giving more detail than is actually necessary. So here I've given a top-level description of each of the chapters. Really, it starts in chapter 4, and you can skip over the first three. But in, let's see, it's chapter 6. Well, this is Art Garland.
We're talking about the PDF now.
So. Yeah, okay.
Chapter 6 you want to jump to? He's got some illustrations in here, too. He's got Parsons in there. There he is. Yeah. Did he give Parsons, how did he treat Parsons? I just saw Parsons' picture flash by.
Yeah. The other contemporary author is someone I've mentioned in an earlier show, who is Daisy Herndon. And
yes.
And her book you can get from Amazon.com as a Kindle. And I would suggest people start there if they're interested in reading more about that, because that's more for the general public. Chapter 6 goes through each line of the history of the 10,000-ton gadget and decodes it into understandable English for those of us who do not have PhDs in physics or chemistry and we're not working at this super elite.
Have you spoken to Daisy? Is she still with us? She passed, didn't she? Or did she?
I'm not sure. She had there's a website called Port Chicago Witness that she was responsible for, but there were only a couple of posts there, and they stopped at 2009. So since 2009, maybe there's one YouTube video of Daisy Herndon. I don't remember the date of that. But since we spoke last, I bought a month's subscription to the People Finding a database, Instant Checkmate. And some people say it's really good. I wasted $34 on this, hoping to find any sort of reference to Peter Vogel or Daisy Herndon. And it's remarkable. There's just nothing. There isn't obituaries. It almost looks like they've been scrubbed from the entire World Wide Web. Peter would be 87 years old if he were still alive today.
Just looking at his PDF here, his book, The Last Wave from Port Chicago, there's one point here, and I think it's chapter 6, and it's the section is subtitled "The Type of Bomb Described by the, quote, History of 10,000-Ton Gadget." And he says the history of the 10,000-Ton Gadget is a technical document that provides a complex mathematical model of the detonation. And it's the section is subtitled "The Type of Bomb Described by the, quote, History of 10,000-Ton Gadget." And he says the history of the 10,000-ton gadget is a technical document that provides a complex mathematical model of the detonation. Too bad. The section is subtitled "The Type of Bomb Described by the, quote, History of 10,000-Ton Gadget." And he says the history of the 10,000-ton gadget is a technical document that provides a complex mathematical model of the detonation. Too bad. Is subtitled "The Type of Bomb Described by the, quote, History of 10,000-Ton Gadget." And he says the history of the 10,000-ton gadget is a technical document that provides a complex mathematical model of the detonation. Too bad.
Peter Vogel gives a capital O. Okay, this next sentence is key. Vogel writes, "The history of the 10,000-ton gadget is the most comprehensive mathematical description of the progression of the explosion of a World War II atomic bomb that the public will ever see."
Uh-huh.
So when Paul Masters purloined, and that's the word they use, when he purloined his unauthorized copy of the document by folding it up and putting it in his shirt pocket, because at that time, Los Alamos, which was at the very highest priority level for purloined, and that's the word they use, when he purloined his unauthorized copy of the document by folding it up and putting it in his shirt pocket, because at that time, Los Alamos, which was at the very highest priority level for them, because of that, at the very highest supposedly security levels, at that time when they had, you know, a fence, security fences around Los Alamos with guards with machine guns, the when you left work at Los Alamos at that time, you could walk through the gate with a document folded in your shirt pocket, and they didn't check you. So that's how the history of the 10,000 gadget document found its way out of Los Alamos.
Wow.
And
Walter, one second. Your audio was fine when we started to get into all about 10 into the particulars of Peter Vogel, and we don't want this without any kind of contesting it. I would suggest pull back a little bit further from the office, and let's see if that makes a difference. Started to get into all about 10 into the particulars of Peter Vogel, and we don't want this without any kind of contesting it. I would suggest pull back a little bit further from the office, and let's see if that makes a difference.
But how's that?
It's a little better.
Not for the first time either.
I'm not hearing the buzzing.
Quite so much. It's a very strange noise. You're not just overdrafting the
But how's that?
It's a little better.
Not for the first time either.
I'm not hearing the
buzzing. Quite so much. It's a very strange.
We have the YouTube.
So we have the YouTube video up there too, showing the Google aerial.
Oh, good.
Survey of Port Chicago, and a weird how it ends up, but it's short.
And it's just a Google Earth flyover. And I'm just learning how to use it. But the way it's going to work is the virtual camera is going to
rescue up there, too, during a Google aerial survey of Port Chicago. And it's weird how it ends up, but it's short.
And it's just not, that's a Google Earth flyover. And I'm just learning how to use it. But the way it's going to work is the virtual camera is going to start out in the Pacific Ocean a few miles from the Golden Gate Bridge, and it's going to Chicago before the explosion.
Tell me that again. You're actually going to put together a drone.
How to use it. But the way it's going to work is the virtual camera is going to start out in the Pacific Ocean a few miles from the Golden Gate Bridge, and it's going to Chicago before the explosion.
Tell me that again. You're actually going to put together a drone.
A Google Earth animation like you see, but the path will be a little bit different.
Got it.
Okay. And during the Vietnam era, the U.S. Navy took over the rest of the Port Chicago town, and there's a memorial there, which you can get to, but not many people visit it. And if you look at that video, you can see how the Port Chicago wasteland actually is in use today. There's some new construction there because, isn't this clever, with all the radiation and all the dangers of explosions, they're keeping people out of it. But now they're using it as a test track for self-navigating vehicles. So the pedestrians will be safe there.
Is there any residual radiation there? Has anyone gone out there and snooped around? It's been a long time.
I think there's a chapter in the book about that. Yes. But it's overwhelmingly scientific, so it's not easy reading. So I can recommend Daisy Herndon's book above his as a starting point. But actually, Jeff,
find that on Amazon.
Yes.
Daisy Herndon,
H-E-R-N-D-O-N. But actually, Jeff, to switch gears a little, I got interested in Google Earth. It's called Google Earth Studio, actually, and it's a free product. And it just is these kind of animations, which are so popular now. Mm-hmm. And the reason I got interested, I think it enhances. Oh, by the way. Oh, never mind. I have, since we spoke last, I've been building a website, and it's a couple of weeks away from launching, but I'd like you to be the very first person to see the sneak preview and your audience. And
it's
thank you.
Boy, that's so much better. What happened? I hear your voice perfectly.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Cool. Since we're running out of time here, I was impressed.
We have about 7 minutes.
Okay, I was impressed by a recent post on your website from Yuichi Shimatsu, who talks about Thanksgiving, and he shares with us some aspects of his family life, which I don't think he's ever shared before. So the topic there is Thanksgiving. Anyway,
he is a true treasure of a human being and a magnificent writer. The way he writes and shares things, it's extraordinary.
I agree completely, and my modest contribution might be to allow people to be more people to be allowed aware of his work. And
he has, if you look on the left, Walter, if you look on the left side of the homepage, you can see Yoichi Shimatsu. He's the top columnist up there on the left, and his article on Thanksgiving is up there as well. Thank you.
Yeah. And the one which really got my attention in the past was called Tracking the Nuclear Sites of Fukushima. And that was one of your, you know, reproductions. And I've said in the past that I thought it was not just the best video I've ever seen. It's 25 minutes long. It's filmed in Japan, where Yuichi and his French video guy go on a kind of travelogue like you've never seen before. And they visit the sites of the secret and illegal Japanese nuclear weapons program, which
he exposed that whole thing. And when every time he went back more than 10 times on bicycle, he bicycled into Fukushima, to the forbidden area, and put his life on the line each time. And each time he was there, he would have to spend months detoxifying himself from the radiation he had absorbed. Really, a remarkable man.
Yep, and one of the locations he visits is Kido Dam in Japan, which is 300 feet high. And he and his video guy go up there, and the security guards come after him. And they're lucky to get away without being arrested. But the reason Kido Dam is so interesting is that unlike just about any hydroelectric dam in the world, it has no powerhouse and no place where the high-tension power lines spread out to supply areas with electric power. So there's something going on within the recesses, the inner recesses of the dam, which are consuming a vast amount of electricity, and it must remain a secret. So Yuichi infers that that's, if you have a secret nuclear weapons program, you need heavy water, which is used to setting off hydrogen bombs. And he thinks that the secret illegal Japanese weapons program is, its heavy water facility is inside of Kido Dam. Well, okay, I was impressed by that, but I thought, well, what if you have a Google Earth Studio type animation, which goes to Kido Dam, it goes up and over, so you see the spillways, and it takes one of those big circles around, and you will see there is no power station, and there are no power lines going away from it. So that, in combination with another thing I've found, but you could still say, well, that's not really decisive enough. But I've also found there's a open source, volunteer driven world mapping initiative called OpenStreetMap, which is all free and extremely brilliant. And a flavor of that is called Open Infrastructure. And it shows basically every power line in Japan or the United States. I don't know if it's everywhere in the world. But you look at to see what the nearest power line is near Kido Dam, and there isn't any.
Interesting. So where now, the video you mentioned, I saw it way back in the beginning. I don't know that I have a copy of that. It might be under his name. Do you know where a copy of that video is that I can go double check and pull, or I can call him up and ask him? But I want to make sure that video is up there. 30 minutes long, about
25. I'll send you a link.
Good. Yeah, that's all I need. Yeah.
It's on YouTube, actually. So if you search for Yuichi Shimatsu, you'll find it's called Tracking the Something or Other. Yeah. So I've got at least two or three more days coming up with the final version of the PDF document, The Last Wave from Port Chicago by Peter Vogel, 2024 edition. It's looking better than what I see right now. Great. And I think a couple more weeks for my new website, Suppressed Atomic Secrets, and you and your audience will be the first to see it.
Wonderful. Well, that's great. We look forward to that. When do you want me to go take a look at what you have on this new website?
It'll be a couple weeks.
Good. All right. Well, you're working. Go ahead.
Well, it's the domain name is atomicsecrets.org, and there's a hyphen between atomic and secrets.org. But it's got some. I'm loading a lot of. I've got a lot of work to do there still, but it's all more than half done.
Well, I think just to wrap this up for this visit, again, it is almost impossible for the average American to believe that this purported government and military would do something like they did, actually set up an atomic bomb and light it off, and killing hundreds of American servicemen. Go ahead.
And we think among the spectators with their feet on the ground was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, President of the United States.
With his wheels on the ground, probably in his wheelchair watching.
It was the last year of his life. He was dying. But but there was this term you hear occasionally, called Pax Americana. So if we had this super weapon, which the other nations of the world did not have, Franklin Delano Roosevelt would have become not only President of the United States three terms running, but King of the World.
That's true. His health. Do you think he was slowly poisoned, as many have speculated about?
Definitely a possibility, but he had some of the symptoms of arsenic poisoning, which could have come from the state of Maine, where his favorite food was blueberry pudding, and the farmers up there, before they had DDT, they used arsenic. But I hear the music, Jeff. Thank you.
Very good. Well, Walter, thank you, and we'll look forward to your next visit. You keep at it. Be safe, and let me know if I can be of any assistance.
Thank you. Bye now.
All righty. You're welcome. Good night. Walter Wilkinson. This is really exciting. This isn't nobody knows about this, except you people who've been listening, and you've got the latest. And Walter is really quite an American patriot, and he's giving perfect credit to Yoshi, who deserves that and much more. Be right back with Hour 2 and Erica coming up next.